My name's Howard Hughes. I'm the author of Once Upon a Time in the Italian West, The Camera Guide to Spaghetti Westerns, and Cinema Italiano, The Complete Guide from Classics to Cult. And I'm going to talk you through the making of And God Said to Cain, a spaghetti western directed by Antonio Margheriti and starring Klaus Kinski. It was an Italian West German co-production and was filmed in Italy, probably in late 1969, over 7 weeks. It was released in Italy in February 1970. As this title sequence unfolds, the accompaniment of Rocks, Blood and Sand, composed by Carlo Savina and performed by singer Don Powell, I'd just like to begin by talking a little about this filming location. There are relatively few filming locations in this movie, and all of them are in Italy. Whereas many spaghetti westerns that were Italian-Spanish co-productions were filmed in both these countries, often around Madrid or in southern Spain, in Almeria, Granada, many more were filmed only in Italy, even ones that included desert, canyon or mountain scenes, such as the early sequences in this film. There were a variety of filming locations reasonably close to Rome, could be used for location scenes, in the region of Lazio, which has a variety of different landscapes from waterfalls, green pastures and rivers, to stone gorges, woodland and rocky areas. Sequences filmed in Italy could be used for ranch scenes, for example, then intercut with footage shot in the deserts of Almeria. It's quite common for this to happen in spaghetti westerns, and directors such as Sergio Corbucci and Antonio Margheriti were masters of this. In Margheriti's later martial arts western Blood Money, for example, scenes are created from two different filming locations by being seamlessly edited together. If you're familiar with the locations, either through visiting them or from watching them in lots of westerns, then it's easy to spot where and when this happens. Margheriti went to Spain to make westerns and also filmed one in the Canary Islands, but And God Said to Cain is solely filmed in Italy. With much of the film taking place in town and at night, it doesn't really matter that the grand vistas of Almeria are absent. This is a dark story in a dark setting, and the claustrophobic nature of the atmosphere is helped by the location choices. It was probably a practical and budgetary consideration too. We're seeing a gang of convicts doing hard labour in a quarry, and that's exactly what this location is, a stone quarry. It's called Cava di Maliana, or Maliana Quarry, which is an enormous gravel and sand quarry to the southwest of Rome, which provided building material for construction work in the city. Often in spaghetti westerns, the area was dotted with fake cacti, and some budget productions relied on these quarries for all their exteriors. Small sets, including a weigh station, were built for films like They Call Me Trinity. There's a shack-like building there that appears later in a minute in this film. In 1969, a Mexican Pueblo set, a church and plaza, was built there to film The Five-Man Army by producer Italo Zingarelli. I think the set was built after And God Said to Cain was filmed. This location is also used for the stagecoach drive and the old man's cabin later in the film.
Gary Hamilton!
This sequence introduces the film's star, the Polish-born actor Klaus Kinski.
Here.
He plays Gary Hamilton, a former army lieutenant. Following the Civil War, it's now 1875, and Hamilton is released from doing hard labour. He served 10 years for the theft of a Confederate gold shipment during the Civil War, the same theft that's perpetrated in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. But due to an amnesty, and in light of his military achievements, Hamilton's sentence has been commuted. A lot of these Italian westerns begin with the hero doing time and hard labour. Films like Death Rides a Horse, The Hills Run Red, A Gun for 100 Graves, Minnesota Clay and Dead Men Ride. The heroes, who have often been framed and wrongly imprisoned, are released, toughened up by their experiences in jail and of having had plenty of time to perfect their marksmanship. They then set out on the vengeance trail to locate those responsible for their time in prison.
You, Gary Hamilton,
have... In this film, Hamilton doesn't have to look far. A free man, he heads for his hometown of Taunton City, to take revenge on the men who framed him for the robbery. Mynona Achenbar, played by Peter Carsten, and his henchmen, the three Santa Maria brothers.
Hereby declare, by virtue of the above-mentioned amendment, your sentence commuted, and order your immediate release. And so therefore, you are a free man.
Now we see Hamilton being released from prison. I like this little sequence. This was shot in a corner of the Elios Film Studio set that was later used as the main set in the film. To make it look like there's a watchtower and guards in the background there, the watchtower is actually it's a hayloft and stable. The eerie music's really good in this sequence too. It's like Kinski's appearance at sundown later on the horizon. The music really enhances Kinski's screen presence. It's a good example of how superior scoring can lift a film and a performance massively. The big church that's in the film later on is literally just out of shot on the right in this sequence now. Hamilton sees a blacksmith working, and he seems to be tentative, fascinated at seeing the outside world again. A man working, kids playing. And of course, the first thing he does then is he goes to the saloon for a whiskey. This canteen is actually crucial to the film's plot and reappears on several occasions.
How much?
It has Hamilton's initials on it, and he later accidentally leaves it on a stagecoach. It was this canteen that was used against him as planted evidence, which resulted in him going to jail. He's been in prison so long that Confederate dollars are worthless these days.
10 years.
So now, we're aboard the stagecoach to Taunton City.
Got a long way to go. Come on. Yeah.
And back into Maliana Quarry for more desert exteriors. Yeah. Yeah. Of the 23 spaghetti westerns Klaus Kinski made from 1964 to 1975, And God Said to Cain is the only one in which he starred as the heroic lead.
Another year?
He was much more often a supporting actor, and usually a villain.
Yes, I must decide.
Kinski was born in Poland in 1926, and came to prominence as a theatre actor in Germany. This led to film roles in the 1950s, And by the 1960s, he was a familiar face to German audiences.
My father.
He had many supporting roles in black and white crimi films, which were often based on the crime novels of Edgar Wallace.
Yes, my father's the only...
Films with titles such as The Dead Eyes of London, The Inn on the River, The Squeaker, The Black Abbot, The Indian Scarf, and The Avenger. In this period, Kinski made his first Western in 1964, Last Ride to Santa Cruz, which starred Edmund Purdom, Marianne Koch, Marissa Mell, Sieghard Rupp, and Mario Edorf. He also appeared in one of the German winner two Westerns, Last of the Renegades, opposite Lex Barker, Pierre Brice, and Terence Hill. 1965 was Kinski's breakthrough year, via prominent supporting roles in two hugely successful international films. He played anarchist Koos de Jed, travelling in a cattle truck being taken to a labour camp in David Lean's Dr. Zhivago, which despite being set in Russia, was filmed in Spain near Madrid. Kinski was only on screen for minutes in this epic length film, but he's still very memorable. Even better was when he played the role of Wilde the Hunchback, in Sergio Leone's second spaghetti western For a Few Dollars More. This was a feature-length supporting role as a member of El Indio's gang of bandits. The film was an Italian-Spanish-West-German co-production with Munich-based Constantin Film providing the German finance. As well as Kinski, there was Joseph Egger, Mara Krupp, Kurt Zips and Werner Abrolat among the cast, all actors with German connections or appeal. The film was a massive success in Europe, and later internationally, and Kinski again had a scene-stealing memorable moment when Lee Van Cleef's bounty hunter, Colonel Douglas Mortimer, strikes a match on Wilde's back in an effort to provoke him in the El Paso saloon.
Take it with you and give it back to him when he comes and visits your father.
By the mid to late 1960s, Klaus Kinski was busy in all types of films, from international heist movies such as Vatican Story and Grand Slam, and war films like Five for Hell, to Eurospy capers Our Man in Marrakesh and Target for Killing, and giallo mysteries such as Double Face. He also continued to make spaghetti westerns, and his presence became a fixture of some of the best films in the genre. He played El Santo, the blonde bandit priest in Damiano Damiani's A Bullet for the General in 1966, and Loco, the villainous bounty hunter in Kabuchi's The Big Silence in 1968. In Man Pride Vengeance, he was cast opposite Franco Nero as a gypsy bandit leader. He was one of the Ruthless Four in the 1968 spaghetti western of the same name, with Gilbert Roland, George Hilton, and Van Heflin. He was also good opposite Antonio Sabato in the mystery western Twice a Judas. In 1969, Ricardo Freda's Double Face gave Kinski his first lead role as wealthy businessman John Alexander, who is caught up in a labyrinthine plot where his deceased wife, played by Margaret Lee, appears to be alive. Also known as Liz and Helen and Puzzle of Horrors, this is an update of Ricardo Freda's early 1960s gothic horrors, spiced up with counterculture, sex and drugs, and colourful fashions. It proved that Kinski could carry a film as the lead on his own. This was further reinforced by his casting the following year in God Said to Cain, which is one of his best westerns. It's a Kinski vehicle through and through, a film completely reliant on and built around his screen presence.
I guess sometimes do look like their owners, just like Grandpappy said. Well, now, here's something special. Well, this here's faster than the Springfield. Yes, sir. You like it, son? Always was good to you, and you were certain of finding me here somewhere, I reckon.
The actor who plays the old-timer, who lends Gary Hamilton a horse and rifle in this scene, is Franco Gula. He was in many westerns, always as a grandpa, a father, gravedigger, an old town drunk, an old local or a deputy sheriff. You can spot him in Django Get a Coffin Ready, If You Want to Live Shoot, A Minute to Pray a Second to Die, God Forgives I Don't, Son of Django, Stranger in Sacramento, Today It's Me, Tomorrow You, and Ace High, also called Revenge at El Paso. By a strange quirk, he appears in two of the other films in this Vengeance Trail set, as an old farmer in Massacre Time, and as a telegrapher in My Name is Pecos. He doesn't usually have much screen time, and this is one of his larger roles. Here he fills Hamilton in with the details of what's happened in town in his absence, which includes Akinbar living in Gary's house with Gary's former girlfriend, Maria. In that sense, this film resembles the earlier spaghetti western, the hugely successful The Return of Ringo. We also learn in this scene there's a tornado approaching, which will be used to Hamilton's advantage. A portion of this scene was cut from many versions of the film, a bit of expository dialogue, but it's present in this print. Perhaps the most surprising thing about And God Said to Cain is that it's a remake of an earlier spaghetti western, A Stranger in Paso Bravo, released in 1968. The plot of And God Said to Cain was based on the story by Giovanni Odessi, who co-wrote the screenplay with Margheriti. There is no reference at all to the three credited writers who are listed as having written Paso Bravo. Odessi was an old friend of Margheriti's, and they'd worked together successfully on Castle of Blood in 1964. He went on to co-produce Margheriti's remake of Castle as Web of the Spider in 1971.
Come on. The only thing is...
Stranger in Paso Bravo stars Anthony Stefan as a character named Gary Hamilton, who after a stretch in prison, returns by stagecoach to his hometown. This time he's seeking revenge for the death of his wife and daughter, who were killed in a suspicious fire. Hamilton was framed for the fire, which was actually instigated and carried out by the three Santa Maria brothers and landowner Akinbar, played by Eduardo Fajardo from Django.
Well, I must say that every girl ain't like that, but some of them were that easy.
Hamilton is aided by a peddler, played by Pepe Calvo from A Fistful of Dollars, a storekeeper and his wife, a sheriff and the local blacksmith, to take on the real culprits. Adriana and Betsy, best known for the 1964 gothic Crypt of Horror, plays saloon singer Rosie. The character names Gary Hamilton, Akinbar, the Santa Marias and Rosie all reappear in And God Said to Cain. When it came to the remake, scriptwriter Odessi was also the film's co-producer with the film's other star, Peter Karsten. Odessi changed a couple of key elements of the story, adding the tornado and having the action unfold over a single night. He and Margheriti also changed the crime Hamilton was framed for, from arson to a robbery. As we shall see, the ending of And God Said to Cain retains the reference to a house fire, with Akinbar trapped in a burning building. A further similarity between the two versions is that Kinski dispenses revenge with a Winchester rifle, not a pistol, just like Anthony Stefan does in Paso Bravo. The similarities even extend to the filming locations, with the Paso Bravo town scenes being filmed at Elias Film Studio in Rome, while Akinbar's rancho was the grand country residence Villa Mussolini near Rome. The guy carrying the mattress in this scene is the town drunk, played by Luigi Bonos, sometimes billed as Gigi Bonos, who appeared in the Trinity films and many other films, mostly comedies with Bud Spencer or Terence Hill. He was born in Germany and appeared in Italian movies throughout the 1950s onwards. His brothers Giovanni and Vittorio were with him part of a popular comedy act in the 1930s to the 1950s. He appeared in all kinds of Italian films, including The Evil Eye, Gidget Goes to Rome, The Castle of the Living Dead, where with Donald Sutherland he plays a policeman, The Biggest Bundle of Them All, Madigan's Millions with Dustin Hoffman, The Secret of Santa Victoria, The Five-Man Army, and 12 Plus One with Sharon Tate. The three Santa Maria brothers were played by a trio of familiar faces from many spaghetti westerns. The first one we meet here is Jim Santa Maria, played by Lucio De Santis in The Red Jacket. De Santis is easy to spot, and usually played a vicious Mexican bandit. Sergio Cabucci liked him and cast him in prominent roles in Ringo and His Golden Pistol and Django. In Django, that's him wielding the whip in the torture sequence at the bridge that opens the film. Between 1965 and 1970, he made many westerns, including Texas Adio, A Coffin for the Sheriff, The Hills Run Red, Django Get a Coffin Ready, also called Beaver Django, Fort Yuma Gold, Wanted, and Son of Django. His role in And God Said to Cain is his last, as he appears to have retired from acting in 1970.
And we'll help him by paving the way.
And here we meet the other Santa Maria brothers, Miguel and Francesco. Miguel, the guy sitting down, is played by Lee Burton, whose real name is Guido Lollobrigida.
Senator.
He was the cousin of famous Italian actress Gina Lollobrigida. He mostly appeared in spaghetti westerns and spy films. His westerns include $100,000 for Ringo, Django Shoots First, Kill Johnny Ringo, Django Get a Coffin Ready, Red Sun, and the excellent French western Cemetery Without Crosses in 1969, where he played one of the Cain brothers. His Euro spies include The Spy with Ten Faces, The Cobra, and the notorious James Bond spoof Operation Kid Brother, also called OK Connery, starring Sean Connery's brother, Neil.
Sure makes me feel good to see you, son.
Sure makes me feel good to see you, Dad.
Attention! The Army of Santa Maria.
And God Said to Cain was an Italian-West-German co-production financed by Produzioni DC7 in Rome and Peter Karsten Production in Munich. This is the German actor Peter Karsten, who also had a large role in the film as Achenbar Sr. With his tall build and blonde hair, Karsten was a notable presence in international cinema in the 1960s and 70s. Like Kinski, he'd been working in German cinema since the 1950s. But came to prominence in international co-productions. He was in the Jack the Ripper thriller A Study in Terror in 1965, the Ypres File-inspired Cold War espionage film The Quiller Memorandum in 1966. He played a Shanghai bar owner in one of Christopher Lee's Fu Manchu films, The Vengeance of Fu Manchu in 1967, and he was in the World War II comedy drama Hannibal Brooks in 1969, and the First World War adventure Zeppelin in 1971. He also made some continental westerns. He's especially good as one of Klein's gang in My Name is Pecos in 1966, which is also part of this set. However, he's perhaps most remembered by the action film Aficionados, a sadistic Nazi sympathizing officer Captain Henlein in Dark of the Sun, 1968. Also called The Mercenaries. It's a very tough action film set in the Belgian Congo in the 1960s. At one point, Henlein tries to kill his commanding officer, played by Rod Taylor, with a chainsaw.
Isn't that right? You said it, Dad.
The plot, which is one of the most violent and cynical of the era, has a squad of mercenaries seeking to rescue a fortune of diamonds from deep inside enemy territory, from under the nose of warlord General Moses and his Simba army. In Gentle Affair, Karsten also appeared in Margheriti's Mr. Super Invisible as Dr. Pomeranz, which, like in God Said to Cain, he also co-produced. He worked again with Margheriti on The Rip-Off in 1978, also called The Squeeze, which saw Lee Van Cleef's master safecracker coaxed out of retirement for one last job by young criminal Edward Albert. Karsten played Van Stratten, the German crime kingpin behind the heist. It's one of Margheriti's and Van Cleef's best collaborations, filmed on location in a wintry New York.
His name is...
Here you are, sir. Good health.
Interestingly, the same year he made And God Said to Cain, Karsten also co-starred with Antonio Sabato in Mafia Connection, also called Those Who Kill and Black Lemons. This was a contemporary story set in Palermo, made by Cain's production company DC7 and produced by Giovanni Adesi, who also wrote the story, which has several similarities with Cain. Mafia Connection begins with Aunt Sabato's character, who has also been framed and wrongly imprisoned, labouring in a stone quarry. Maria Luisa Sala played Sabato's sister, Assunta. Lee Burton was an assassin, and Peter Karsten played rich and influential Commander Tori Lopresti, whose son is later kidnapped by Sabato. The film has the same English-language dubbing team as In God Said to Cain.
Let's go.
and Carsten even has the same dubbed voice. This bleak tale of revenge plays out like Day of the Owl crossed with Hell Drivers, as haulage boss Sabato tries to find out how his wife came to be killed in an accident.
It's against him. Shut up! I don't want this story mentioned in my house. If he really is coming, we'll wait for him. And we'll make sure he doesn't get in here alive. It's in your interest as well. And remember, my son mustn't know anything about this.
And he won't know. You can count on it, sir. Get the men together and meet me outside of town. He was in for life. Do you think he escaped?
There won't be any way of knowing. After he's dead.
And if anything should happen?
I want him dead. Did you hear that, Miguel? Stop him.
In the interview book Spaghetti Nightmares, Antonio Margheriti is asked, did you find Klaus Kinski difficult to work with? He answered, very difficult. He always had to be the centre of attention. Nevertheless, I made 4 films with him. I think Herzog was the only director that made more films with him. As well as In God Said to Cain, Kinski appeared in Margheriti's gothic horror film Web of the Spider in 1971, and in 2 Jungle War films made in the 1980s, Commando Leopard and Codename Wild Geese. But Margheriti's son Eduardo recalled that although they clashed initially, the director and star worked well together. This was just after Kinski had reputedly tormented Ricardo Freda during the making of Double Face. In fact, at the beginning of the 1970s, it was announced in the industry press that Margheriti was to make a film adaptation of The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
A ghost returning.
That would have been made after Margheriti directed the science fiction fantasy Mr. Super Invisible starring Dean Jones of Herbie the VW fame.
Are you worried?
Margheriti had planned to film it in Prague, with Dean Jones as the last heir of the family line and Klaus Kinski as the Baron. What a shame that one didn't get made. Klaus Kinski is the myth-making Baron Munchausen, but unfortunately Margheriti couldn't get the project financed. It's difficult to imagine 2 films less alike than In God Said to Cain and Mr. Super Invisible, but they were released in Italy the same year, barely 7 months apart, and they demonstrate Margheriti's versatility. In Mr. Super Invisible, Dean Jones plays a bumbling scientist who accidentally drinks an invisibility serum when a chimpanzee pours it into his tea, and hilarity, as they say, ensues. In the film's best scenes, Mr. Super Invisible humiliates a love rival in a French restaurant and scares his guests at a seance. Alan Collins is dubbed with a Peter Lorre voice in the English dub. It's very, very light in tone, like a Disney live-action movie, and was distributed in the US by KTEL International. But the idea of a hidden adversary seems to appeal to Margheriti, and many of his heroes strike unexpectedly, be they hidden in the shadows or in the claustrophobic, stifling jungle. By creeping through the shadows and using the underground catacombs, Kinski is pretty much invisible to his enemies and In God Said to Cain. Instead of the Baron Munchausen project, Margheriti reunited with Kinski and Peter Karsten for Web of the Spider in 1971. This was a remake, sometimes almost scene for scene and shot for shot, of Margheriti's black and white gothic, Castle of Blood, also called Danse Macabre, which he'd made with Barbara Steele back in 1964. The original is one of her best vehicles and one of Margheriti's best films. The remake adds colour and widescreen, but is inferior, despite the presence of Anthony Franciosa and Michel Mercier. The title, Web of the Spider, is certainly appropriate, as the film makes up in cobwebs and candles what it lacks in tension. Peter Karsten played metaphysician Dr. Karmas, and the film is probably most notable today for its guest star turned by Klaus Kinski, who had a small role as Edgar Allan Poe, though of course he featured prominently on the posters, particularly in Germany, where it was released as Dracula in the Castle of Horror.
Is it true the wind's coming tonight?
You bet your life. And you better stay indoors. No peeking out the windows. There's going to be lots of dangerous lead a-blowing.
A-blowing in the breeze tonight.
Annie, no!
Oh, no, little one. No, no, no. Wait. Uncle Jonathan can't see a damn thing. If you take these away. In the house now.
The wind's almost here. And you make sure they go to bed, Sue.
You better stay inside, too. I wouldn't be surprised if Achenbar doesn't try to scare that wind away.
That's a magnificent sky, and this is a beautifully filmed scene. I don't know which of the two cinematographers credited on this film shot this, but it's really well done. This is what spaghetti westerns do best. An almost wordless scene where sound and image are everything. Like the opening ghost town sequence of The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, or Django waiting in the windy Tombstone Cemetery for Major Jackson in Django, or Frank's men emerging from the wilderness in Sweetwater Farm in Once Upon a Time at the West. Music and image come together, and Kinski looks fantastic here. Approaches, the storm whips up, and a riderless horse gallops past. Hamilton has slipped past them and infiltrated the town. This wind becomes part of Hamilton's vengeance, slamming doors, opening windows, tolling the church bell, hampering visibility and unnerving Achenbar's men. And all that begins with this scene. When you look at spaghetti westerns as a whole, there are two main motivations for the heroes, greed and revenge.
All right.
If any justice emerges from the rubble, it's a byproduct of one of these two motives. In And God Said to Cain, Hamilton rids Taunton City of Achenbar and the Santa Marias as he takes revenge for being framed.
Let's get back to town before we end up shooting it out amongst...
Revenge is probably the most prevalent motive in spaghetti westerns. It's a major driving force in some of the genre's biggest titles. For a Few Dollars More, The Return of Ringo, Django, Navajo Joe, Django Kill, Death Rides a Horse, Day of Anger, God Forgives I Don't, The Big Silence, Kioma, and Once Upon a Time in the West. They're all revenge westerns, and they're only the tip of the iceberg.
It's made up into groups. You go with your men to the front of the line.
Even if they don't begin as revenge scenarios, films such as A Fistful of Dollars, A Bullet for the General and Face to Face end up as revenge scenarios due to confrontation and actions by the characters in the course of the film.
The true Achenbar's offering a reward?
See, a big one.
Most spaghetti western revenge films include a variety of staple ingredients. The hero may be seeking revenge for a betrayal or the death of a loved one, often a family member. This could be a wife, son or daughter, a parent or an entire family. Most spaghetti western avengers are men, but there are occasional exceptions, such as Lola Colt and Honey Calder. The vendetta can be triggered by the theft of land, property or assets, or a wrongful accusation that results in imprisonment. The hero often has spent time in prison, sometimes doing hard labour, like Hamilton does here. They may return to their hometown to get to revenge, again like Hamilton does, or they may have to track the perpetrators down through the West from town to town. In many spaghettis, vengeance is woven into the plot as a hidden agenda for the hero's actions, while in other films, Revenge is an obvious motive from the outset. Sometimes the villains are exposed for who they really are and are made to pay, often financially, but more often with their lives.
If we keep this up, we'll lose that.
Many of the great spaghetti westerns feature flashbacks to the crime that caused the vendetta. This happens in The Big Silence, Django Kill, Dead Men Ride, Django the Bastard. Today it's me, tomorrow you, For a Few Dollars More, Death Rides a Horse, and of course the memorable flashback at the climax of Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West, which reveals why Charles Bronson plays that harmonica. These cave scenes are the subterranean Indian catacombs and mine workings, which Hamilton uses to navigate the town. They were filmed in the Palazzolo Grotto in Manzana. It can also be seen in the musical spaghetti western Little Rita of the West, starring Rita Pavone. Kinski shoot the living and play for the dead. And in other westerns, such as The Fighting Fists of Shanghai Joe and A Man Called Blade. It's probably most famous for being used in Sergio Leone's A Fistful of Dynamite, for the cave when Rod Steiger and James Coburn find the aftermath of a massacre in the caves at Santa Rosita. It's a good location. Many Italian films use the Grotto di Salone in Rome, which is a much larger space, squarer in shape. They made loads of those Hercules, Ursus and Machis sword and sandal films there. But Palazzolo is much smaller, with arched tunnels. Margheriti had already used this location as the sulphur mine in the finale of his western Vengeance, and he'd returned to it time and again in his career. If you're familiar with Margheriti's work, you'll know that he likes caves and caverns a lot. These Italian caves were also used in his gory Vietnam movies, like The Last Hunter and Cannibal Apocalypse. It was also used as a Gaulish prison and the site of the huge catapult in Margheriti's Giants of Rome in 1964. You get a really thorough tour of these Palazzolo caves in Margheriti's 1964 film Hercules, Prisoner of Evil. It's used as the Grotto of the Falcon, the mossy caverns where a sorceress lives. She transforms her victims into hairy, facially disfigured zombies who roam the countryside wearing a cape. British bodybuilder turned actor Reg Park played Hercules, though he's named Ursus in the original Italian version. The caves are the atmospheric setting to several scenes in this surprisingly well-plotted sword and sandal horror movie. It was another example of Margheriti's mashups of genres to create something new. Another very similar horror spaghetti western to En God Sutter Kane is Anthony Steffen's western Django the Bastard, filmed at Cinecittà Studios and released in Italy in 1969. Just as Kinski is able to appear and disappear in Kane to pick off Akenbar's henchmen, Steffen's Django is actually a ghost, which gives him an edge in the extended nighttime shootouts that form much of the action. The saloon and church are also crucial to the action in both films. In Steffen's film, directed by Sergio Garrone, Django's unit was betrayed in battle during the Civil War, and he returns from the dead to Desert City to kill the three officers responsible. This style of Western is often described as Gothic. If we look at what defines Gothic novels, they're a style of fiction categorised by the use of desolate or remote settings and macabre, mysterious or violent incidents. That seems to sum up Django the Bastard and En God Sutter Kane perfectly.
Why tonight?
One of the ways En God Sutter Kane evokes horror cinema is with its interior decor.
I saw him tie up that bell.
The interior at Akenbar's hacienda, with multiple mirrors, candlesticks, statues, a grand piano, ornate carved timberwork and heavy drapes, looks like an Italian Gothic horror movie. The film's production design, set decoration and costumes were all carried out by Mario Giorgi, who also worked on Margheriti's Vengeance, Webber the Spider and Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eye during this period. And God Said to Cain is a fully fledged gothic Italian western. Most of the film takes place one horrible night, from dusk till dawn, during a storm that ravages the town, amid screeching birds, spooked horses, tolling bells, a howling wind, straw and dust. The only spaghettis I can think of where there's such a good use of a storm is Ringo's return to Mimbra's in Duccio Tesari's The Return of Ringo, where Giuliana Gemma appears framed in a church doorway to interrupt a wedding ceremony. And at the end of Giuliano Petroni's Death Rides a Horse, starring Lee Van Cleef and Jean-Philip Law, there's an excellent shootout in a sandstorm.
Jim!
There's also a really good duel between Django and Dean O'Neill in Django Story, or The Ballad of Django, that was filmed at Elias Studios around the same time as In God Said to Cain. It takes place in a howling wind that's really well done. It's the best bit of the film, and judging by the actors' faces, they really turn the wind machine up to 11 for that one. It's a real hurricane.
I'm ready for that drink now.
Akenbar's army cadet son Dick was played by Antonio Cantafra. Billed as Michael Kobe, he became a spaghetti western star when he teamed with Paul Smith in the Carambola films, which were imitations of the Trinity comedy westerns. Smith and Kobe remade other Hill and Spencer films as We're No Angels, Convoy Buddies and The Diamond Peddlers. Cantafra appeared in the spaghetti western Black Killer in 1971, again opposite Kinski. Kinski's good in this one as a lawyer whose law books conceal guns, while Cantafra is a local Mexican bandit. Cantafra was good as Peter Kleist in Mario Bava's Eurogothic Baron Blood, who inadvertently brings the Bloody Baron back from the dead, and also memorable as the human side of superhero Supersonic Man in 1979. Bizarrely, by far his most successful film, and one viewers might recognise him from, is the 1979 film adaptation of Jackie Collins' bestseller The Bitch. Set in the garish world of sex and discos, the film detailed the sordid antics of the jet set. 1970s London is their playground. It starred the author's sister Joan Collins as Fontaine, the owner of a failing discotheque called Hobo. Cantafra played Nico Cantafra. The character's name was changed, it's Nico Constantine in the book. An Italian hustler, gambling addict and thief, who is trying to retrieve a diamond ring he's planted in Fontaine's fur coat while under pressure from gangsters. The film has an excellent disco soundtrack, and Cantafra can be seen dancing with Joan Collins to Cuba by the Gibson Brothers. The Elias Film Studio, Western Street, is a familiar setting to many spaghetti western fans. In Italy, several Italian producers and studios built their own in-house western sets. These were a combination of false fronts and actual three-dimensional constructions, with workable interior sets. There are several sets in or near Rome. There was one at Cinecittà Studios in Rome, which can be seen in Day of Anger, made in 1967, and another at Dino De Laurentiis Studios, which can be seen in The Hills Run Red, made in 1966. There was even Carve Studios, which was a very ramshackle rural set built by actor Gordon Mitchell, which was used in several of his films he appeared in. In 1964, a Western set was built at Elias Film Studio. It was financed by producer Alvaro Mancori for the Cameron Mitchell Western, The Last Gun. also called Jim Il Primo and Killer's Canyon. It was directed by Sergio Beganzelli. Though built for The Last Gun, it was seen on screen in cinemas in other films first, such as Mario Bava's The Road to Fort Alamo, also released as Arizona Bill. Outside of the Almeria sets built by Sergio Leone and others in Spain, the Elios Western Street is probably the most widely recognised of the Italian Western sets. This set features a saloon interior, a bank, sheriff's office and jail. Sets that were used in many productions. The signage could be altered depending on the requirements of the film. It was used in Sergio Corbucci's Django in 1966, where the street was ploughed up with mud. It's the first time where Clint Eastwood and Eli Wallach carry out their hanging trick in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, and it was used in dozens of westerns. Corbucci particularly liked this western set, and he's partially responsible for the set's familiarity, as he used it in many of his films, including Johnny Oro, which was released internationally as Ringo and His Golden Pistol, The Specialists, and The Big Silence, also called The Great Silence, where the set was made to look like an alpine town with fake snow, which was actually shaving foam. In 1969, the Elios Western Street started to look a bit tatty and was falling into disrepair. You'll notice in 1968 spaghetti westerns that were filmed there, only one end of the street is being used, with the opposite end in very poor condition. Watch the finale of the Anthony Stephan William Berger Western, The Man Who Cried for Revenge, to see what I mean.
Gary Hamilton has got a life sentence ingrained in his skin. Day after day, they convinced me that my place was inside. Life outside.
For this film, Margheriti followed the muddy, wintry path trodden by Sergio Corbucci and created an unrelentingly grim tale of vengeance with biblical overtones. In a great little scene, Hamilton visits the town priest, who is described as a man who believes in a forgiving God, and tells him, if innocence is repaid with prison, then I've earned the right to kill, even if God chooses to punish me for it. Later, Akenbar frustratedly shoots the priest, a recurrent event in Corbucci westerns too, and the priest actually plays his own death rattle on the church organ.
Even if God chooses to punish me for it.
Yes, he got in somehow. And then he killed Jim!
In 1969, the Elias Western town set was given a major renovation for Gianfranco Parolini's acrobatic spaghetti western Sabata, starring Lee Van Cleef and William Berger. The film was financed by Alberto Grimaldi, who had produced some of the most successful spaghetti westerns of the era, including For a Few Dollars More, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, The Big Gun Down and Face to Face. Sabata had a large budget and was a big success in Italy and also internationally. It's Lee Van Cleef's last truly great spaghetti western. Carlo Simi, the production designer on Leone's westerns and Corbucci's and Salima's too, enhanced the set with new signage, buildings and paintwork. Part of the makeover for Sabata involved the building of a large church at one end of the street. It's the open end of the street that features a barn and hayloft. It's where Major Jackson's men make their entrance to face Django's machine gun in the Corbucci film, and the hayloft where Clint Eastwood Blondie hides to shoot the rope to free Tuco from hanging in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. The church was built next to this barn. The church and its interior is used for a couple of key scenes in Sabata, and William Berger can be seen playing the church organ in one scene. After filming of Sabata finished, the signage was left up and the church remained standing and a fixture of the set to become the focal point of later films that were shot there. I think And God Said to Cain was filmed quite soon after Sabata was filmed there, or even simultaneously. In Sabata, the town was named Doherty City, and in God Said to Cain, the town is called Taunton City. I'm not sure how it's spelt. There's no actual signage to corroborate the spelling. The signage left over from Parolini's Sabata can be spotted in God Said to Cain. Doherty City can be read on the Water Tower, the Grand Palace Hotel, and the Ferguson Saloon are also present. And of course the church, which is key to the scenes in And God Said to Cain. Soon after And God Said to Cain had been filmed, The White Water Tower had Black City, Nevada painted on it for Sergio Corbucci's The Specialists. And it's in that incarnation of the set that was used in many of the films thereafterwards. These include several Dimofalo Fadani westerns, including the excellently titled One Damn Day at Dawn, Django Meets Sartana, made in 1970, with Hunt Powers and Fabio Testi. Also filmed at Elias were three of the later Sartana films, Sartana the Gravedigger, Have a Good Funeral Sartana Will Pay, and Light the Fuse Sartana's Coming, plus The Unholy Four, Gold of the Bravados and His Name Was King. Many of these featured Klaus Kinski, who must have been sick of the sight of the place by the early 1970s. Kinski made many budget westerns in this period, strictly for the fee, with as little screen time and effort involved as possible. His name is on the posters and was used extensively in the advertising, but he was really just the guest star. Kinski talks with disdain about spaghetti westerns during this period in his autobiography, Kinski Uncut. In 1971, the year after the release of And God Said to Cain, Kinski wrote, "Westerns, one after another. They get shittier and shittier, and the so-called directors get lousier and lousier." Kinski was living the high life in a villa in Rome, working for cash, and according to journalists today, driving Rolls Royces and living on caviar and champagne. But he seemed to be on a treadmill, churning out low-budget B-movies, mostly westerns and gory horror films. Kinski released 10 films in 1971, 7 of them westerns. This was the most prolific year of his career since his crimmy heyday in the 1960s, and he'd never again matched this productivity in his career. It was shortly after this that Kinski accepted the offer from Werner Herzog to star in his existential costume drama Aguirre, the Wrath of God, which was shot in Peru and hooked Kinski out of this endless cycle of spaghetti westerns and Euro horror films. Kinski's numerous low-budget western appearances sort of blend into one another, which is why it's great to see him being given his chance to play the lead. And for him to have the confidence and resolve to take the role in And God Said to Cain and deliver a great performance.
That's why I took the rock off the well.
Kinski is both a director's dream, for the presence he brings to his film roles, and also their nightmare. On set he could be disruptive and uncooperative, particularly if he had a receptive audience, such as a journalist.
When I was a kid, you know, things just...
Kinski doesn't have to do much on screen to be interesting to watch. He's an actor from that era, like Charles Bronson, Lee Marvin, Toshimo Mifune, James Coburn or Anthony Quinn, who can kind of carry a film. If the film's awful, these actors are still interesting to watch. It's a bit like films scored by Ennio Morricone. No matter how terrible the film is, it's worth listening to the maestro's score. And of course, the mere presence of one of these actors, or indeed Morricone's music, can make a passable film good, and a good film great. It can elevate it that much. Like Sergio Corbucci's The Great Silence, Margheriti's trump card here is an on-form Klaus Kinski.
Now what about you? Long rest. Lots of snakes.
Antonio Margheriti was a prolific director who, like many Italian directors, made films in a variety of popular styles. Margheriti was more talented than many and scored more hits than most, especially internationally. He often used the pseudonym Anthony Dawson, or sometimes Anthony M. Dawson. He's also been credited as Anthony Daisies, as in The Flower, a literal translation of his name into English.
Pedro.
He liked to travel and saw filmmaking as a way of enjoying travelling the world too.
Let's bring him into the
He built up strong relationships with actors and worked with some, such as Lee Van Cleef, David Warbeck, John Steiner, Alan Collins and Richard Harrison, on a number of occasions. Actors who worked with him noted that he seemed to have bigger budgets than more run-of-the-mill productions, and more cameras and equipment. This enabled him to make good-looking, good-quality films quickly by filming from multiple angles through careful positioning of the cameras. In And God Said to Cain, this is obvious from a couple of shots in the action scenes, where stuntmen's deaths feature more than once, shot from different angles, or the scene where Akenbar's men walk to the outskirts of town that seems to have been shot simultaneously from a variety of angles in one take.
Put him down on the floor.
As a result of Margheriti's professionalism and the fact that he worked with regular collaborators, such as cinematographer Riccardo Palatini on numerous projects, he's made several films that are revered today as classics of cult cinema. His influence continues to be felt via directors such as Quentin Tarantino. Margheriti remained extraordinarily active in the filmmaking, even in the 1980s when the Italian film industry in general was floundering. Margheriti's first love and speciality was science fiction and special effects. He created and constructed the special effects for his own films and for other filmmakers too. He added value by employing a director who could carry out his own special effects work and seems to have ensured that Margheriti's filmmaking activity continued for almost 30 years in the business.
One miserable man. I wish to meet him face to face. Go find him. Pass these out to the men.
Born in 1930, Margheriti studied engineering at university, but in 1950 he left the course to pursue a career in the Italian film industry. In 1960, he made his directorial debut with Spacemen, also called Assignment Outer Space, a science fiction film starring Rick Van Neuter. He then made Battle of the Worlds in 1961 with Claude Rains as a cantankerous old scientist who warns that the approaching planet the Outsider will do the Earth harm. In the mid-1960s, he made four films set around the Gamma 1 space station, at least one of which, The Wild Wild Planet, remains a cult favourite, with its colourful special effects, karate-kicking female kidnap squads, and four-armed alien hitmen. He later returned to science fiction in 1987 with the seven-part German-Italian-French TV series Treasure Island in Outer Space, starring Ernest Borgnine, Anthony Quinn, Philippe Leroy, and David Warbeck. It has some really excellent special effects, such as Fiumicino Spaceport, but at the same time, it was deemed an expensive failure. It was later edited down into a 2.5-hour feature film. One of his most famous ventures was the 1983 TV series Yours World, a four-part, four-hour epic that was part 1 million years BC, part Planet of the Apes. It features former American football player Red Brown as Yor, a blonde caveman whose world is revealed not to be prehistoric, but post-nuclear. Kareem Clary and Alan Collins are Yor's travelling companions, while John Steiner was the villain, the Overlord, who plans to repopulate Earth using Yor. Edited into a 90-minute feature, Yor, Hunter from the Future, for international release. It has received much flack over the years. It even won awards at the Razzie Worst Film Awards, though the film has since built up a cult following. It was shot in the deserts and weird rock formations of Cappadocia in Turkey and was released internationally by Columbia Pictures. The special effects were credited to Edward and Tony Margheriti, which is Antonio and his son Eduardo. Eduardo also worked on many of his father's projects as assistant or second unit director. Throughout his career, Margheriti repeatedly employed several actors on his many projects. The third brother, Francisco, who soon meets his end crushed beneath the church bell, is played by another Margheriti regular, Alan Collins. Luciano Pigozzi, who used the screen name Alan Collins, was a prolific actor in Italian popular cinema, who thanks to Margheriti carried on working into the 1980s. He has over 100 film appearances to his credit. He was sometimes compared to the Hungarian actor Peter Lorre, particularly in his horror film performances, and in some films Collins was dubbed in English with a Lorre-like voice. Collins appeared for Mario Bava in The Whip and the Body, Blood and Black Lace, Hatchet for the Honeymoon and Baron Blood, and in black and white Italian Gothic such as Castle of the Living Dead with Christopher Lee, and Terror Creatures from the Grave with Barbara Steele. He was also in Eurospy films like Agent 077 from the Orient with Fury, Secret Agent Fireball, Spy in Your Eye and Masterstroke. He was also in the Gialli, The Case of the Bloody Iris and All the Colours of the Dark, and the Mad Max 2 Road Warrior ripoff, Exterminators of the Year 3000. He appeared in the westerns Death at Owl Rock, Sabata, His Name Was King, Dead Men Ride, The Price of Death and White Apache. He worked for Margheriti on many occasions, including Your Hunter from the Future, The Hunters of the Golden Cobra, Mr. Super Invisible, Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eye, Ark of the Sun God, Codename Wild Geese, Commando Leopard, Alien from the Deep and others. Collins and Luciano De Santis also played two of the murderers in Margheriti's previous western, Vengeance. On working with regular collaborators such as Alan Collins, David Warbeck, John Steiner, Margheriti commented, "They're very happy to work with me because I know how to establish a solid relationship with them. They are all very clever, versatile actors."
Miguel!
Outside of his own films, Margheriti also carried out special effects work on other people's films too. He supervised the effects on Aldo Lardo's Star Wars derivative, The Humanoid, in 1979, starring Richard Keel, Barbara Bach, Leonard Mann, Arthur Kennedy, Karine Clary and Ivan Rasimov. Again, effects have come on a long way since Margheriti's 1960s science fiction films. Margheriti also staged the head-on train collision between the two speeding locomotives at the climax of Sergio Leone's 1971 spaghetti western, A Fistful of Dynamite, also called Ducky Sucker. Margheriti's expertise in special effects led to him being linked to Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey in 1968. According to Margheriti's son Eduardo, Kubrick's American producers at MGM were so impressed with what Antonio achieved on the Gamma One films that he was contracted to oversee, with Douglas Trumbull, the special effects on 2001, but Antonio turned the offer down. He was, however, uncredited assistant director and second unit director on the infamous Andy Warhol, Paul Morrissey horror films Flesh for Frankenstein and Blood for Dracula in 1973-74. Margheriti worked on the miniatures unit of Enzo G. Castellari's action-packed Second World War film, The Inglourious Basterds, in 1978. It's probably no coincidence that when Quentin Tarantino reused the misspelt Castellari title for his own 2009 World War II adventure, he named Chet Margheriti during the cinema gala sequence, the premiere of propaganda film The Nation's Pride. Brad Pitt's character claims to be Italian stuntman Enzo Gorlami, while Eli Roth is cameraman Antonio Margheriti. And when Rick Dalton goes to Italy to make movies in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was set in 1969 but released 50 years later in 2019, Dalton makes three spaghetti westerns, including Nebraska Jim with Sergio Cabucci, and then he stars with Margaret Lee in Operazione Dynamite, a fictional spaghetti secret agent movie on which he meets his future wife, Francesco Cappucci. According to the posters, Operazione Dynamite was directed by none other than Antonio Margheriti. Margaret Lee, who was born in Wolverhampton in the UK, was Klaus Kinski's most frequent co-star. They made 11 films together, including Circus of Fear, Five Golden Dragons, Five for Hell and Venus in Furs. Beyond science fiction, Margheriti is probably most associated with horror films. He made Castle of Blood and The Long Hair of Death with Barbara Steele in 1964-65, Castle of Terror with Christopher Lee in 1963, the horror Musclemen epic Hercules Prisoner of Evil in 1964, the supernatural drama The Unnaturals in 1969, and Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eye in 1973. The latter, a gothic horror set in Scotland, featured Jane Birkin, Serge Gainsbourg and Alan Collins, dubbed with a Scottish accent as manservant Angus. Margheriti also directed The Young, the Evil and the Savage in 1968, about a serial killer on the loose in a girls' school that was based on a screenplay co-written by Mario Bava. Margheriti made some good Eurospy films, Operation Goldman and Killers Are Challenged, both in 1966, and some lively sword and sandal epics, including The Fall of Rome, which has an impressive dam burst special effect, and The Giants of Rome, a version of The Guns of Navarone set in ancient Gaul. Margheriti referred to films like this as his bread and butter projects, and they often reused stock footage from other films. But his heart was much more in his science fiction or fantasy projects. He made the Arabian adventure Anthar the Invincible, and also The Golden Arrow, complete with flying carpet special effects. So you can see from his output that he was anything but a boring, run-of-the-mill director. He was also a master at casting and getting the best out of aging stars. For example, he worked well with Yul Brynner on Death Rage in 1976, also called The Anger in His Eyes. Brynner played a legendary American hitman who makes everyone nervous when he arrives in Naples to avenge his brother's murder. In the 1980s, Margheriti directed a series of violent, actionful jungle war movies, filmed in a variety of locations, including the Philippines. Margheriti created some really good special effects of these films, bursting dams, helicopter attacks and crashes, burning villages, train explosions, which were reused from film to film. Sometimes they're set in Vietnam, sometimes in other Asian countries or Latin America. But Margheriti filmed them in the Philippines, starting with The Last Hunter in 1980. They include The Commander, The Last Blood, also called Tornado, Tiger Joe, codename Wild Geese, Jungle Raiders, Commando Leopard, and Indio 2. These films often starred British actor Lewis Collins, who played Bodie in UK TV's The Professionals, or Lee Van Cleef, David Warbeck, Alan Collins, Francesco Quinn, and John Steiner. Margheriti made films that capitalised on box office hits, such as Raiders of the Lost Ark and Romancing the Stone, with heroic adventurers off on exotic treasure hunts. These include Hunters of the Golden Cobra and Ark of the Sun God. He also made the aquatic horrors Alien of the Deep and Killerfish. The latter, shot in Brazil, featured Lee Majors, Karen Black and James Franciscus as thieves after a stash of emeralds hidden in a piranha-infested reservoir.
Out of the way.
Margheriti's last official directorial release was Virtual Weapon, also called Cyberflick in 1997, starring Terence Hill and former boxer Marvelous Marvin Hagler. It's a likeable if outlandish movie that begins as an action buddy cop movie, like Lethal Weapon, but turns into a sci-fi fantasy Invisible Man film, when Hill's character is apparently killed and he returns via a chunky desktop computer as a hologram. Margheriti made films that were very violent and bloody, and films with no violence at all. Films set in very real, cruel environments, and films set in complete fantasy worlds. He could make comedy, drama, action, horror, from Mr. Hercules versus Karate to Cannibal Apocalypse. And he draws fans from all quarters, but perhaps only for his jungle war films, or just his westerns, or his gothics, or his science fiction. You seldom hear anyone saying, "I'm an Antonio Margheriti fan, I love all his work," in the way you hear people following a single director and enjoying their entire output, regardless of quality. Over a 10-year period, Margheriti also made six spaghetti westerns of varying quality. His first effort, Dynamite Joe in 1967, starred Rick Van Neuter as an explosives expert who is something of a ladies' man. In a different costume, in a different time and place, Joe could be James Coburn in A Fistful of Dynamite, but this film is one of those that's an odd mixture of comedy and serious drama and doesn't really stick to one or the other. There's a saloon song, Dynamitey, that might have been in Quentin Tarantino's thoughts when he made Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There are, however, some very good special effects when a sulfur mine explodes, causing a deluge of water. An effect so good, it reappeared in Margheriti's Western Take a Hard Ride 8 years later. Much better was the horror Western Vengeance in 1968, with Richard Harrison as Rocco Barrett, tracking down the five killers who murdered his friend. His friend was pulled apart by horses in one of the most violent, savage opening scenes in any spaghetti Western. Harrison's hero carries five bloodied pieces of rope with him, representing each of the killers. In Italy, the original title translates as Joko Calls Upon God and Dies. The film features nighttime shootouts, a catacomb scene, a torture scene when Harrison's eyelids are held open with matchsticks in the morning sun, and a caped criminal mastermind called the Professor, played by Gian Maria Volonté's brother, Claudio Camasso, who lives in a sulfur mine. It's a close relative and something of a precursor to what Margheriti achieved with his other horror western, And God Said to Cain.
I don't intend to attack you. I'm unarmed. I came because I want to know the truth.
After And God Said to Cain, Margheriti made three more westerns. Blood Money in 1974 was an Italian, US, Spanish, Hong Kong co-production, filmed in Spain and Hong Kong. It's a mixture of martial arts and gunplay.
Gary.
An East meets Western, co-produced by Carlo Ponti and Run Run Shaw. Also released as The Stranger and the Gunfighter, and The Ugly, The Colt and the Karate, it teams spaghetti Western icon Lee Van Cleef and Hong Kong star Leo Liei in search of a fortune in gold that's belonged to Lei's Uncle Wang.
It's only Akumbo.
After that, Margheriti's Whiskies and Ghosts in 1974 is a bizarre supernatural Western fantasy that misses the mark on all counts. It's a big-budget attempt at a Trinity comedy, again financed by Carlo Ponti, with Tom Scott, alias Alberto Terracina, as medicine show huckster Napoleon, and Fred Harris, alias Fernando Bilbao, as the ghost of Davy Crockett, the Bud Spencer character. It's basically Mr. Super Invisible relocated to the Spaghetti West, with objects, usually whiskey bottles, dangling in mid-air on strings to give the impression of Crockett's invisibility. The best thing about it is that it's filmed on those grand Sergio Leone sets in Almeria. It's a little too offbeat to quite work successfully, but as a showcase for Margheriti's camera trickery and special effects, it's an interesting curio. In 1973, Margheriti had made another film with the Scott Harris duo, a martial arts kidnapping caper filmed in Sydney, Bangkok, Singapore and Hong Kong, called Mr. Hercules Against Karate, which closely resembles the Terence Hill Bud Spencer films. It was released in Germany as Two Great Dogs in Hong Kong and may have given Margheriti the idea of making Blood Money. All these movies were co-produced by Carlo Ponti, were filmed outside Italy, and had good production values. In 1975, Margheriti made his last Western, Take a Hard Ride, a big old-fashioned action Western filmed on location in the Canary Islands, with spaghetti Western trappings, stunts galore, and a rousing score by Jerry Goldsmith. It stars a host of famous faces, Jim Brown, Dana Andrews, Barry Sullivan, Fred Williamson, Jim Kelly, Harry Carey Jr., and Lee Van Cleef, who predictably plays a bounty hunter. And they're all on the trail of a fortune in cash. It doesn't live up to its tagline, "It rides with the great Westerns," but it certainly references plenty of them. From Lee Van Cleef's harmonica playing villain, from High Noon, to a bandit chief in this film called Calvera. Of Margheriti's Westerns, Vengeance and God Said to Cain are easily his best, I'd say. They're certainly my favourites. The darker visual style and narrative style suits him.
You out of your head going out alone? What got into you? Let's go home. Mike, leave three or four men here. Get the rest back to the ranch.
The music to When God Said to Cain was composed by another regular Margheriti collaborator, Carlo Savina. I first came across Savina via his work as a conductor. He conducted several notable scores for other composers. Enzo Musetti's scores for Hercules and Hercules Unchained. Nino Rota's score to The Godfather in 1972. And Fellini's Roma and Armachord. He was also an excellent composer in his own right, who worked in many styles and genres, including the scores for Barber's Lisa and the Devil in 1973, and the Eurospy movies Killers Are Challenged, Secret Agent Fireball and Fury in Marrakesh. He won a David Donatello Award in 1985 for the score for Damiano Damiani's crime movie The Pizza Connection, also called The Sicilian Connection. Savina contributed memorable spaghetti western soundtracks to A Few Dollars for Django, Ringo and His Golden Pistol, also called Johnny Oro, Vengeance, Heads or Tails, Thunder Over El Paso, His Name Was Holy Ghost, Kill the Poker Player, Death Knows No Time, and Tony Anthony's hugely successful 3D spaghetti western Coming At Ya in 1971. Many of these soundtracks feature title songs. For example, There Will Come a Morning in A Few Dollars for Django, Vengeance in the film Vengeance, and Blood, Rocks and Sand in And God Said to Cain. These were performed and the lyrics written by another regular collaborator, American singer and pianist Don Powell. Powell moved to Italy in the 1950s with Archie Savage's dance troupe and forged a career for himself as a singer and songwriter. In addition to his westerns with Savina, he also sang the title songs to Texas Adios, Death Walks in Laredo, $5,000 on One Ace, The Sheriff with the Gold, Killer Amigo, The Boldest Job in the West, and Steve Reeves's only spaghetti western, Long Ride from Hell. Powell also sang the title song to Liliana Cavani's Year of the Cannibals in 1969, backed by the Alessandroni singers, to music by Ennio Morricone. He does a really good job on And God Said to Cain. He wrote the lyric to Savina's music. The lyrics have direct relevance to Gary Hamilton's situation. Many spaghetti western songs didn't, and mentions his prison term, the release and revenge. The song is almost bluesy or gospel in its tone, with Powell's vocal runs and the prominent backing vocals. It was released as a single in Italy by Milan record label Bentler to tie in with the film. Both the title song and Savina's incidental music have something in common, in that they simply don't sound like the score for a western, but for the most part a horror film. Savina's full score was released by Beat Records in their Gold series in 1998.
Good luck for yourself.
Listening to it in isolation from the images, there are western elements, particularly in the various instrumental versions of the title song's melody, as a love theme, a riding theme for the stagecoach journey, a mariachi trumpet theme. But most of the score is often sinister, with eerie echoes, sustained strings, organ, jarring electric guitars, and tingling shock music.
It's yours.
Adding consistency, or maybe familiarity, to Margheriti's output, various Savina cues show up in other Margheriti films. For example, tracks from Vengeance are used in Blood Money, and also in In God Said to Cain, and a track from Cain is reused in the Jungle War movie Tiger Joe. Like
I did when I was a boy. Well?
It is very difficult to pin down what exactly Margheriti's cinematic style is.
You wouldn't like it, boy.
His films look and sound very different to one another, even ones where he's using the same cinematographer and other collaborators, such as composer Carlo Savina. It seems Margheriti could make whatever type of film he wanted to, or that his backers wanted him to, from a light and airy children's comedy to a cannibal movie, whatever the audience trends and industry market dictated. Like Sergio Corbucci and Mario Bava, Margheriti uses, sometimes overuses, a lot of zoom lens effects.
This is the truth.
And he also has a lot of high or low angle shots. This is particularly prevalent in God Said to Cain, with its biblical references, and high and low angles providing a heaven and hell's eye view of proceedings.
We'll have a
better chance if we split up.
Recurrent imagery in Margheriti's films include floods and other impressive liquid effects, such as bursting dams, landslips and mudslides. There's also a lot of subterranean scenes in his films in caverns, mines and catacombs. Margheriti also seems to love, or perhaps hate, snakes, as there's often the presence of snakes in his films, be it the Rattler, crushed by Gary Hamilton at the beginning of When God Said to Cain, the serpent beheaded by Dr. Carmus in Castle of Blood, the bag of snakes carried by gambler Tyree in Take a Hard Ride, or the snake pits and other reptilian hazards of Margheriti's treasure hunt adventures like Hunters of the Golden Cobra and his many jungle war movies.
When you attack that stagecoach,
there's also a recurrence of halls of mirrors and mirror images in Margheriti's visuals, be it the showdown at the finale of When God Said to Cain, or sequences in Your Hunter from the Future, The Wild Wild Planet, Anthar the Invulnerable, Dynamite Joe, and others.
He was here with Mary. But you... you convinced Mary to betray him. She lied, and he paid. Now I know why he wants you dead. The only thing that's sure is that we must kill him before he kills you. Even if it means that I must become a murderer like you, Dad, and kill an innocent man.
No matter what the material, even though Kinski claimed he didn't care or put no effort in with some of his films, somehow he doesn't come across as a lazy actor. Even phoned-in Kinski is worth a watch, and he was always good in westerns. In And God Said to Cain, he seems to be making an effort, which results in the film being as good as it is. He's got one of those faces etched with sorrow and anguish. It sort of tells its own story. When he plays a man being released from prison, you just take it for granted. You can easily picture Kinski out west. The environment works for him. Kinski looks like he suffered, and when he smiles, and he rarely smiles in his westerns, it usually spells trouble. I think Kinski's films with Werner Herzog brought out the best in Kinski's acting, and especially Aguirre and Fitzcarraldo are among his best films. They're both impressive achievements, and Kinski's impressive in them. He seems to live the roles, live the characters, and you can't really imagine anyone else playing them. He can do that too, in an all-star Hollywood movie, or grade Z Eurotrash. Working to great success with Werner Herzog wasn't without its challenges, though. Kinski was notoriously difficult for many directors to control, and a viewing of Burden of Dreams, the documentary by Les Blank about the making of Fitzcarraldo, or Herzog's own My Best Fiend, affirms this. In addition to Maliana Quarry and Elias Film Studios, two other filming locations were used as the setting for the action. This location, Akambar's Rancho, is Villa Mussolini near Rome. This was a walled equestrian complex with stables and those giveaway Italian cypress trees that show that this isn't the American Wild West, but really to the Wild West of Rome. The large main building was often used as the chief villain's ranch, Stengel's hacienda in Sabata, Zorro's rancho in Django Kill, and General Tampico's hideout in If You Meet Sartana, Pray for Your Death. It can easily be spotted in The Tramplers, Massacre Time, Last of the Bad Men, Kill and Pray, Days of Violence, Payment in Blood, Any Gun Can Play, God Made Them, I Kill Them, Return of Sabata and Deaf Smith and Johnny Ears. It was often the scene of the final confrontation in many of these films, as the heroes attack the villain's lair, as in Sabata and Return of Sabata.
Wait a minute! Frank! Frank, why?
Why, because you wanted somebody to shoot at. You stay put, hear me?
Stay put yourself, Juanito.
Gary Hamilton's betrayer, Maria, was played by Marcella Michelangeli, who won several beauty contests and later studied acting. She also released some pop singles billed simply as Marcella. Her film appearances include Arizona Cult Returns, You Can Do a Lot with Seven Women, and Padre Padrone. She was particularly effective and scary as Marcy, one of the extortionist kidnappers in Enzo G. Castellari's The Big Racket in 1976. She has a son with actor Luc Castel. They appeared together in Rainer Werner Fassbinder's Beware of a Holy Whore in 1971, which was inspired by the making of Fassbinder's offbeat western Whitey in Almeria. Castel plays a film director with cash flow problems, who is trying to get a German-Spanish co-production started. Meanwhile, he's stuck in a Spanish hotel with his cast and crew, including Helen Shigula, Eddie Constantine, and Marcella Michelangeli. It's not exactly a glowing depiction of international filmmaking.
No.
And God Said to Cain was released in February 1970 in Italy. It was distributed to theatres by Panta Cinematografica.
Okay.
The popularity of westerns was starting to wane by then, after the heady boom years of 1966 to 1968. And it was the year of the huge success of Enzo Barboni's They Call Me Trinity, starring Terence Hill and Bud Spencer. This was a comedy that laughed at spaghetti westerns and ridiculed its heroes. It was the most successful western in Italy that year, and others such as Sergio Corbucci's Companeros and Frank Kramer's Adios Sabata, two films set in Mexican revolutions, were also really popular. And God Said to Cain still made the top 10, alongside three of the Sartana films, which blended James Bond gadgets with trickery and supernatural overtones. Sartana is an indestructible ghost, like Django the Bastard, but with a better tailor. It's interesting to look at the Italian trailer for And God Said to Cain, which announced that it was the first Western presented in the splendour of 70mm and the magic of stereophonic sound. It must have been blown up to 70mm, as it was shot in 35mm Technoscope. In a latter-day interview, Margheriti stated that there was a magnificent 70mm print residing in London, without specifying exactly where it was located. The film's magnificent cinematography, in Technicolor and Technoscope, by Riccardo Palatini and Luciano Trezzati, was completely lost in murky, soupy, blurred, dark videotape prints, which for many years were the only way to see the film. I can't find a reason why there are two cinematographers credited, but perhaps one filmed the town scenes, the other the landscapes. Or perhaps one had to leave the production to prior commitments, or for speed, two were employed to shoot simultaneously. Palatini was Margheriti's cinematographer on several other projects. In fact, he died in an aircraft accident in the Philippines in 1982 while working on Margheriti's Tiger Joe. Akbar!
Akbar!
For advertising purposes, Margheriti was billed under his usual pseudonym of Anthony Dawson, and Kinski was billed as Klaus Kinski in some advertising, spelt with a Y on the end of Kinski. In France, it was one of Kinski's most popular films of the period, where it was released under the title Et le vent apporte la violence, and the wind brings violence, in 1970. It was distributed by Cosmopolis Films, and they filmed My Birth. Kinski was a popular star in France, and went on to work extensively there in the 1970s and 80s, often in arthouse projects. By the mid-1970s, Kinski was resident in Paris in a studio apartment in the Marais district. Kinski appeared in several films from the mid-70s into the 80s, that received little international recognition or distribution. He had left Rome when work dried up, as the film industry struggled against the challenge of television.
Thank you.
fault.
You murdered him!
No!
No!
You murdered my son.
No!
Pay for it.
No.
It's also one of those westerns where various stuntmen die in different scenes in different costumes to make Akinbar's gang appear more numerous. A lot of the henchmen in spaghetti westerns were played by stuntmen. In fact, after appearing in westerns and other action genres, many became elevated to stars as their popularity grew, or were cast as the lead in lower-end productions. In long shots of the hero or villain riding through landscapes, which were obviously the film's star names, it's rarely actually the lead actor, but a stunt double stand-in, wearing the actor's costumes and with their hat brim tilted down low. In And God Said to Cain, stuntmen Renzo and Osavid Pavarello can be spotted among Akinbar's henchmen. They were brothers who were part of a family of circus performers. They appeared in loads of westerns. Renzo made more than 25 westerns, and Osavid over 50. As well as stunts, Osavid can also be seen performing fire-breathing acts in some of his westerns, as in Gold of the Bravados and Three Musketeers of the West. They often appear as saloon brawlers or henchmen, and are pretty easy to spot. Here Osavid is the henchman we call Pedro, who is wounded and carried into the saloon earlier in this film.
Where are you? All right, come on out! Where are you hiding? Can't you come on out and fight like a man?
West Germany and God Said to Cain capitalised on Kinski's horror and crimmy thriller success when it was released in 1971 in February as Satan the Avenger, or Satan's Avenger. Kinski's voice is redubbed even in the German release. Tom Betts, the editor of the spaghetti western journal Westerns all'Italiana, told me that Kinski was too busy on projects, that he just didn't have time to stick around to dub himself. Kinski was often dubbed by Gert Martinsen, who provided his voice in And God Said to Cain, and also Agiri the Wrath of God, Dr. Zhivago and The Big Silence. Kinski's own voice can be heard in very few German dubs, and equally in very few English language dubs. In English, I think it's his own voice in Grand Slam, maybe. Android, Fitzcarraldo, perhaps on Nosferatu the Vampire, but it's not many. A review in Film Echo, Film Week, by Eduard Langer, was positive in its praise for the film and of Kinski, writing of the star, "He is convincing, expressive, a very disciplined, mature, manly Kinski," and saying of the film itself that it tramples big-hitting US productions into kids' films. To my knowledge, And God Said to Cain wasn't released in the US or UK theatrically, though Margheriti's Vengeance and Blood Money were both released in the UK. In the US, Take a Hard Ride and Blood Money were both released too, probably due to the presence of Lee Van Cleef, and the fact that they coincided with the martial arts and blaxploitation crazes. Blood Money was retitled The Stranger and the Gunfighter in the US. And God Said to Cain was released on videotape in the UK in 1985 as Fury at Sundown by Market Video. Its many releases on VHS and DVD in English language versions since have been cut in the wrong aspect ratio or from very poor prints. The first time I saw it was on one of those DVD compilation sets from America, sourced from a VHS tape. I liked it straight away, even through the awful picture quality and sound quality. But getting to see it over the years in gradually improving prints has only made me like the film more. Sometimes better quality prints end up dispelling the mystique of a film, but that's not the case here. We can finally see what's happening that stormy night in Taunton City. This is one of my favourite Kinski westerns too, and one of Margheriti's best. Finally available in edition that does the film and Gary Hamilton's revenge justice.
Dig under the ruins and you'll find more than enough to rebuild your town.
As the film ends, we're about to see this biblical quote, which paraphrases chapter 4, verses 9 to 12 of the book of Genesis. Like the title sequence, it's translated into various different languages for different prints. The actual biblical text reads, "And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel, thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother crieth unto me from the ground. And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be upon the earth. And Cain said unto the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear." And on that cheerful note, I'd just like to thank a few people who've helped with the research on this audio commentary, including Tom Betts, Phil Hardcastle, Lee Broughton, Michael McKenzie and Clara Hughes. And also Andy Hanratty, who's recorded and edited together this commentary tack. I thank them all for their help. I hope you've found this commentary informative and this maybe shed some new light on Margheriti's dark gothic western.